This is that part of the meeting that is a complete honor for me. It's rare in sobriety that you have the blessing to meet somebody from back home at the airport, especially when her flight was canceled. And she's an absolute sweetheart because she knew what to do. I left my phone book at home so I couldn't get in touch with my committee person, because what could happen? It's Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything has always been perfect, hasn't it? She knew enough to know that you all would send somebody to pick her up. So she stepped up, and I was on the telephone with the hotel trying to contact you also. And as I turned around, I had heard the voice, "If anyone is here to pick up Liz, she is in the airport." And I'd like to thank all you guys on Delta Airlines who do not break the FAA rules. You would not tell me where she was. Thank you, Liz, for having the good sense and sobriety to know that we love you, and we're very proud to hail from the New England state of New York, Queens. I introduce you proudly to Liz B.
Up my life. You gave me the hope when I didn't know there was any hope for me. Good evening to each and every one. My name is Liz Bailey. My anonymity's been shut the hell for a long time. I am the most grateful and definite alcoholic you ever could lay your eyes on. Hi, everyone. I have wanted to take this opportunity to thank Tom and for the call, the letters and the calls. And I want you to give my hostess with the mostest, please stand up, Jerry, please. She's been a living doll. I'm in an airport every weekend, and if I don't learn something, shame on me. So I know when I get there and I don't know who's going to meet me, I go over to the counter and I have them announce my name and tell you where I'm at so you can find me. And that's a good idea for anybody, really, to use that. I want to thank the committee for this beautiful miracle that you've put on this weekend. You've worked a whole year for this. And can we give the committee a round of applause? I'm not going to start naming names, but all of you whom I haven't seen in 30 years, 38 years, how many years, that came out here today, can I thank you from my heart? You've overjoyed me for the fact that you're still with me and you've been with me. That's what's so great about it. You've never left me. And I'm privileged to be in Atlanta, and this is called Marietta. I'm privileged to be here. At 78, I'm privileged to be anywhere, to tell you the truth. I really am. Met Brett tonight. Thank you, Brett, for sitting at that table. I want to thank these young men that are here and young women. You're the next legacy. If I live to July the 11th, I came in July the 11th, 1952. I will make 47 years of sobriety this year. I'm on a 60-day plan, all right? I came in at the age of 31, but I was really 13. Mentally, physically, and spiritually, I was beaten to a bottom that I just couldn't go any lower. There was a minister preaching. I want to thank all the speakers before I get into this. Every speaker that was here this weekend, how did you guys know to do that? I guess the higher power had something to do with it. Because I've been with these speakers before, and every one of them are just tremendous. And to your missus too over there. And every missus that's in here that lived with a drunk, I want to put a gold star on you. Believe me, I do. You deserve a gold star. Believe me. But thank you for the non-alcoholics and Al-Anon. I've been an Al-Anon member for 43 years. Lois and I spoke at the last time in Sing Sing. We had dinner together, and she was a tremendous person. And I want Al-Anon to always think how hard Lois had in starting Al-Anon. She had a very hard way to go. I want to thank Mary and Tommy. Tommy really got to me today. She was with me at the time that I spoke for Bill Wilson's 28th anniversary. And for her to tell me that today was tremendous. I didn't think anybody was still here from 1962 when I spoke for Bill. And Bill was a beautiful person. And he presented me with the big book. And I want to congratulate that young man with 5 days. Don't put it on a shelf and let it collect dust. Read it and get your answers in there. But Bill gave me my big book, and in it he said, "Dearest Liz, you're a magnificent demonstration of all that is AA, affectionately yours." Now that's what Bill Wilson thought of me. And I feel so honored for many years about that big book that he presented me. My pages are turning yellow, but that's all right. I'm going to wrap it up in some cellophane one day. I don't tell you what day. I can't make commitments anymore. There was a minister preaching. He says, "If you drink alcohol, you're doomed to die." And a little old lady down front, she said, "Amen." He says, "If you smoke those cigarettes, you're doomed to die." And the little old lady, she said, "Amen." He said, "If you chew tobacco." She said, "Look at that. He stopped preaching and gone to meddling." So I'm going to go to meddling. Stacy, I do not want to get off this platform without thanking you, Stacy, for the beautiful lunch that you've taken me today. Thank you. And stay beautiful, like you are. I always usually sing, stay as sweet as you are. I listened to my son speak in Erie, Pennsylvania 2 weeks ago. And I've been following him, or he's been following me, I don't know which way, but for 7 years now, and it's been wonderful. Marshall, it's good to see you too. I'm the oldest of 5 children, born in Brooklyn, raised in Manhattan. I lived directly in front of Mother Cabrini Hospital. My dad was a pitiful drunk. I grieved about my dad's drinking. I'd see the policeman hit him with the billies. I'd watch the neighbors hit him with the frying pans. And I watched the blood just spatter. And I watched my dad come out of Mother Cabrini Hospital many, many times, dressed like a mummy from the beatings that he took. And I used to lay out the window and play chicky if I seen my mother coming, so that my father wouldn't take these beatings. I've never seen my mother take a drink in my entire life. And for many, many 24 hours in AA, I was wishing I could give her 2 drinks and bring her to hell in here. Because she could use the 12 steps and 12 traditions, believe me. You know, she was 3 days short of 95 when she died 12 years ago. She had a good life. Being the oldest of 5, and I don't know what dysfunctional means until 10 years ago, but I came from a broken up home. I don't know what it is to have a home life. I know my mom put me out to work at 8 years old on a sleep-in job. And then I was always on a sleeping job making $10 a week, and she would come and take the money before. So I get the bright idea at 14 years old that I'm going to start selling King Kong. And I want you to believe it was King Kong. The man made it in the bathtub next door. I bought it by the gallon, and I sold it for 40 cents a cream pitcher. Now, you told me to take mayonnaise, olive oil, butter, cream, line myself up. They used to tell you to eat a good meal. Well, that King Kong was so powerful, it went all through the mayonnaise, the olive oil, the butter, the cream. So I stopped taking that sick stuff. I sold plenty of booze, little cream pitcher, 40 cents, and I made good money. I put a better pair of shoes on my brothers and sisters, and I put a better table for them to eat, and I helped pay the rent. Boy, at a certain hour, I had to be padlocked into a side room for my protection. I'm laying out the window one night, and I see this sharp dude. Oh, God, was he sharp. Almost fell out the window. He was so sharp. He had a roll of money, and I said, "Woo, there's a live one." I was always looking for a live one, you know. I don't look for no deadheads in AA either, child. I look for the live ones in AA. That's right. Yeah, don't look for no live deadheads. So I went running downstairs to latch on to this dude with this roll of money. And got down there and found out it was a $5 bill around a lot of ones. But he's so cute. Who cares? So I went from uptown Manhattan down to the Lower East Side. And if you wanted a good time, you sent for Liz. And I'd go and give you a place so you'd give me a place. So at the age of 14, you could not tell me I wasn't a woman. I'm drinking, I'm partying, I'm hanging out. So I asked my mother if she would sign for me to marry this man. And she says, oh, no, dear, over my dead body. Now, I found out something about me at the age of 14. Don't you ever, but never, tell me what not to do. Don't do that. The very thing you tell me I can't do, I'm going to do it and pay all the prices. I thank my God till this moment that AA never told me what to do. They suggested everything to me. Thank God you suggested everything to me. You never told me what to do. And so I quit school at 14, took sleep-in jobs, drunk every Thursday and Sunday. Left New York with this very man, 10 years older than myself, and we went to Baltimore, Maryland. The third day of January 1939, I was standing in the courthouse crying my heart out. And the minister stopped my ceremony and he says, my dear young lady, would you mind telling me just what you're crying about? I said, at last I got him. I'm going to be honest with every one of you in this building this night. That was the sorriest day of Mr. Bailey's life when he said I do to Liz Ulrich. Mr. Bailey never stopped crying from January 3rd, 1939, till he went home with the Lord August the 12th, 1986. That was a sorry day for that man. Now, I'm 17 years old, and I've got a marriage license. No more mama, no more neighbors. Nobody's going to tell me how to live. Woo! I'm going back to New York. You could picture me at 17, because I'm 78 now. Woo, baby! Oh, honey, I was just down with it, honey. Yes, I was. Gonna tear up New York. Got back to New York. Mr. Bailey gave up every liquor joint. He gave up gambling. He gave up hustling. He gave up going to parties, and he sat down. And I became a mental case at the age of 17. Because here I am raring to go, and he's sitting. And he sat from January 3rd, 1939, till he went home with the Lord, August the 12th, 1986. And I just couldn't take that. I couldn't take it. So I started to nurse in my little drink through the week. I began to look forward to weekend drunks. Now I have to have a drink to wash, to iron, to cook, to talk. Then I watched a change come over me. I began to curse. Every word came out of my mouth was a curse word. I watched another change. I began to fight. I began to fight everything and everybody. I watched another change. I began to leave my house from one day to 3 weeks at a time. Watching me go down. And you've got to remember, 50 years ago, or even say 47 years ago, nobody was talking about alcohol or alcoholism. Good morning. What you drinking? I just said, good morning. What you chipping in for? I'd drop children, groceries, everything. I'd be the runner all day long, whatever we were drinking. And I'm watching me go down. I don't know what to do about it. I'm on my knees to Mr. Bailey all the time. Daddy, please forgive me. Please forgive me. I don't want to drink like this. I don't want to act like this. I had three beautiful children thinking that that would stop me from drinking. Mm-mm. Neighbors took my children. Yep, neighbors would give my children to their children to keep their children out of trouble. And all the trouble I was getting into. And I remember so clearly when one of my neighbors pulled me up on the carpet. I'm ashamed to live next door to somebody like you. I bought this house to get away from people like you. What is the matter with you? You're dropping out of the cabs at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. You're blasting records like it's in the afternoon. And what is wrong? You're fighting, you're cursing. And I said, I suffer with my nerves. And she suggested that I drink rum. Isn't that nice? I left that lady standing in my little bitty kitchen. I ran around to the Empire Liquor Store. I live in Jamaica, Long Island. I'm still waiting for one of you drunks to tell me how in the hell did I wake up in Briarcliff, New York with that bottle of rum. I don't know how I got to. Now I'm in Briarcliff, New York. A gorgeous lady has taken me off the streets into her home. I do not want this lady to see what a drunk I am. I don't want her to see this. And now I became a booze fighter. I'd put a shot in my coffee in the morning. I'd call it Coffee Royal. I would hide the bottle. I don't care where I hid the bottle. I found it. And when I'd stick it in between her lingerie, please don't leak, you know, don't leak. And I'd stick it up in the old-fashioned toilet tank, and I'd be running up that tank drinking that cold liquor all day. When the lady came home, I'd be burping and pooping, and the lady didn't know what to do for me. She sat me down by the fire one night, and she said, you know, Liz, you're a lovely person, but drinking is your problem. She said, I put my husband out of here for his drinking. Well, the lady filled me with so much of guilt and remorse that I wanted to die. I really wanted to die. I'm away from my three beautiful children and my house. I never called it a home. I had every material thing any woman on this earth would want. Mr. Bailey happened to be a furry of girls by trade. And every time I had a period of dryness, he'd make me another fur coat. I had fur coats like beans, you know that. And so what happened this particular year, he made me a leopard coat, the most gorgeous leopard coat you ever did see. And he threw a party for the job, for working on the coat. And he brought the coat home and he threw it out on the bed. And I looked down at that coat and I hated it, a beautiful leopard coat. I said he made it so he could spot me anywhere. I gave it away. I wouldn't keep that coat, no. You know what? I'm going to tell you something. You have to get sober to see how sick you are. If you never get sober, you'll never see how sick you are or were. You do have to get sober. And how many times do I wish I had that leopard coat in sobriety? Many a time. But I remember this lady after she lectured to me up in Briarcliff, New York. I decided I'm going to sit in the Catholic Church all day. Now, every one of you have done this. Every one of you have done it. And I sat in that Catholic Church all day just so I wouldn't touch a drink. Because I have to do a decent thing. I want to do a decent thing. This lady took me off the streets into her home. And so I sat in that church till 4 o'clock. Now, come on, you go with me now. I walk out the church, walk over into the bar, and I say to the bartender, give me one to relax, because I'm going to peel this lady's potatoes, and I'm really going to get her dinner started. Give me two to get started. You know what's happening, don't you? Yeah, you know what's happening. Way ahead of me. Yeah, I'm going to peel this lady's potatoes. I'm going to really make her dinner tonight. Now, he gave me a third free drink. You do not walk out on a free drink. That's not nice. Then I have to buy one back to look good. Very important I look good to the bartender or the barmaid. And by the time I get to the fourth or fifth drink, the hell with her and her potatoes, baby. Let's roll. So you know the lady never got any potatoes from me. And I came back home one cold March night. Mr. Bailey threw me out the front door in brown bags, shopping bags. Now I'm sleeping down in unfinished basement. Don't drink down there. Don't smoke down there. And then I'd go back in the day, take care of my children, and back to the basement until he let me come back in. And I'm watching me go down. And one morning I woke up with my head coming off my body. I took Anacin's, Alka-Seltzer, BC. Oh, God, I put a raw egg in a beer. I did everything to straighten my head out, and I couldn't get my head straight. I reach over and grab the Bible off my night table. Maybe I can find the answer in the Bible, how to straighten out this rotten, filthy life of mine. Now I've been beaten to a pulp a couple of good times where I couldn't come out for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. And Mr. Bailey passed my room. Put that Bible down, you hypocrite. Put it down. 20 minutes to an hour, you'll be so drunk, you'll be slapping one of the kids down. He was right. Nobody got in the way of me getting a drink. And nobody gets in the way of me staying sober. You hear what I'm saying? Nobody. Nobody. Uh-uh. And I didn't want to hear Mr. Bailey's big mouth. I had told Mr. Bailey many times, when I'm coming off a drunk, shut up. And if I'm on a drunk, shut up. And then when he wouldn't speak to me, look at this, he's not talking to me. Then I'll exit. Good thing to get out with, you know. But he kept his mouth going that day. This is the first time I thought of suicide. I literally ran and jumped up in the second floor window. And I'm standing in the window getting ready to throw my body down into the yard. And there's a little lady named Nana Backus, lived downstairs. And she spots me standing up in this window. Mr. Bailey! Mr. Bailey! You better get her, she's gonna jump! And I see his head come out the next window. I see his hands come out. He says, Nana, will you let that bitch jump? I'll be rid of all my problems, all my troubles. Please let that bitch jump. Well, I looked over at him. I wanted to know who the hell did he think he was. I guarantee every one of you I got down out of that window. I got back in the bed and I pulled the sheet over me and slept that one off. The nerve of him. I continued to drink. Now here's something else you can identify. Mr. Bailey was not an alcoholic. He was damn cheap. He couldn't be an alcoholic. Too cheap. Maybe if you drank with me. Haven't you heard that, girls? I wouldn't want to drink so much in Rome. Because now I pick up a drink, I'm gone. I'm not there. So he goes around, he buys a bottle of Gordon's gin. And we lay up in the TV room and we're drinking this gin till about 11 o'clock the bottle gets like this. Now if you're drunk like me, I panicked! That's not going to carry me through the night. That's not going to be my morning drink. So I hit him with an elbow like this. I said, Daddy, will you get up and run around to the liquor store before it closes? He said, not me, Liz. I've had enough. You know I wanted to kill him? Don't you know I wanted to kill him? Oh, God. You ever see an Indian on a rampage at 2 in the morning? Up, dressed, out, zoom! Aren't you afraid to go underneath the Long Island Railroad? Who's thinking about the railroad? Not me. I was getting to Sutton's Barn Grill so that I can fill my Coca-Cola bottle and close up the place. And I continued to drink. I continued to watch myself go down. I came in one night off a $2 beer drunk. Look at this, you're drunk again and you have no dinner cooked. I said, man, I've asked you time and again to shut that mouth. Shut that mouth. Would you mind seeing me up to the bedroom? He walked me 3 steps to my knowledge. When I woke up, I was stretched out on a bench. A policeman was sitting at the front of me. My front 2 teeth was doing like this. Blood was all over me. I didn't know where I was. All I remembered is walking up the first 3 steps to my bedroom. And a big man standing in the door was doing like this. Please don't ask me how did I answer those questions. But he said to Mr. Bailey, take her home. And I said to Mr. Bailey, I'm going to get you for taking me to some Kings County hospital. I said, nah, don't you dare. I'm going to get you. So you know that man sat up in chairs for 3 nights. He was afraid to lay down. And he's right, because I might have gotten him if he laid down. You know that. For taking me to some Kings County. So he sat up in those chairs. So I continued to drink. And one night, Mr. Bailey came to me, and he said, you're the nicest wife when you're sober. Drunk, you're a Jekyll and a Hyde. Why don't you try this AA? If you desire a drink, run over to the phone and pick up the phone and call somebody to talk you out of the drink. Now, I'm not going into the flowery words of what I said to Mr. Bailey. But I think you know what I told him to do with AA, though, don't you? Okay. See, that's my character defect, and I have tried to do better in sobriety. Really, I have. But Mr. Bailey, Dr. Graninger had said to him, I want you to go home and tell Miss Bailey she's going to drink herself to death, she'll drink herself into a mental institution, or she will drink herself into Alcoholics Anonymous. And once you tell her that, keep your big mouth shut and take care of Mr. Bailey. Praise the Lord and hallelujah and amen. The man never, but never mentioned AA again. I am ever grateful today, because if he had to beat me with AA, I'd have never made it. My nature would not have let me make it. And I love AA because we don't promote anybody in here. We attract you in here. And a few weeks ago, I was speaking in Sheepshead Bay in Brooklyn. And I stand up there saying, if you see what I got and you want what I got, and the guy winked at me, I said, I ain't talking about that stuff. I said, I got to rephrase that, you know. I said, I'm going to really turn that stuff around. Oh, Lord. But I thank God Mr. Bailey never mentioned AA again to me. And I'm going down. I'm watching me go down. And I'm watching people pull me up on the carpet constantly, talking about whipping me if they catch me drunk again and all kinds of stuff. And of course now, I drank another 8 to 10 months. And I hope this was my last drink. You know, with 47 years of sobriety, it hasn't been easy. I haven't had a desire for a drink, but twice in 47 years, from self-pity, 3 years and 9 years, I thought of a drink. And the telephone saved me each time. Praise God for telephone service. Call somebody. You might save the other person on the end, other end, like I was. But I remember so clearly this lady was coming to sell some insurance for the house. Remember, I never called this a home. There was no love there. Nothing was there. And I got up this morning in July, because my date coming into AA was July the 11th, 1952. And I made salads and I straightened up and I left dusting to last. And I'm now drinking with hard two-fist drinkers in the VFW hall on 110th and Merrick Road. I could never stand anybody who took a drink like this and sipped it for 20 minutes, get out of my way. You got on my last nerve. I couldn't take you. You had to drink like I was drinking to be with me. Otherwise, I didn't bother. And I remember so clearly that one of the guys called me. I heard his voice. I banged the phone. He called me back the second time. I said, oh, man, don't bug me. I said, there's a lady coming here. I haven't seen her since I'm 8 years old. And I really want to see her. Her name was Miss Lindbaum. And I banged the phone on him the second time. I remember going to the store and I came back. He was on the phone for the third time. He said, Liz, do me a favor, hop a cab. I'll introduce you to the people. I'll put you back in the cab and I'll send you home to your company. I figured, let me do that because he's going to drive me up a wall today. He's not going to let me stay in here. So I get the cab, I go over to the post. The booze start lining up, the jukebox is going, and I'm singing, you always hurt the one you love. The one you don't want to hurt at all. Give me another drink. Smile if you're happy. Give me another drink. I'm 78 years old and I haven't seen the lady till yet. I woke up, I was in one of my son's twin beds. And my second son always had the pan ready for me, always nursed me back with soup and salads, my second son. And I wake up, and there's my mother standing at the foot of my bed and Mr. Bailey over here. And my mom's got her head just going and she's screaming that somebody done something to her. Somebody done something to her. And I look over at Mr. Bailey, he got his head going. And he's saying, no, Mom, no, Mom. Nobody's done anything to her. She happens to be a very sick girl. Well, honey, when he said girl, because you know my name was Bitch, don't you? He said, she's a very sick girl. I don't know what went over me, but I got up out of that bed, and I went to the basement of the house. I stayed in the basement for 2 days praying to die. I wanted out. And I looked at my oldest son, 12 years old, and I said, Richard, I can't live like this. This is not the way I want to live. Look at this. You can't depend on me for anything. And I haven't seen Miss Lindbaum till yet, to tell you the truth. I forgot what the lady looks like by this time. But you know, I started to screaming in that basement that second night. Oh God! Oh God! Please help me. Please help me. I have never screamed to God so as I did that second night in that basement. And I said to my son, I'm going to go up on the Long Island Railroad. I'm just going to jump in front of a train. And I love AA again. He could and he would if he was sweating. And God answered me just as clear that night like I'm speaking to you. Try this AA that your father has told me about. There were no women in AA when I came, very few women. Thank God for you women today. Of course, now I go into the city and I'm trying to get up into group steps. And I said, the hell with AA. And as I went to turn to go down in the bar, boy, if you don't call this the higher power, what is it? A woman looked down the stairs at me and she says, are you having trouble? I said, yes, ma'am. And I ran up the stairs to her. She escorted me into the front part of the office and she started to tell me about her life. Oh my God, who talks about themselves like that? My mother says, put it in a drawer, under a rug, in a closet. Don't you dare go out and tell nobody where you got the black eyes, the busted mouth, and things like that. And then she turned to me and she says, you know, Liz, it's the first drink. I says, oh, come on, sweetie, I've been drinking for 19 years, from 12 to 31, downhill all the way. I don't know what social drinking is. I don't know about crossing any lines. I've seen a hell of a lot of lines, but I ain't crossing any of them. And so she said, we do it 1 5 minutes, 1 10 minutes, 1 hour, 1 day at a time. We do it with meetings, 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 and we do it with a sponsor. When I came to AA, there was 150,000 members. AA was just 17 years old. Today, we're 64 years old this June coming up. And also, you have over 2.5 million members. And don't one of you ever tell me you can't find a sponsor out of 2.5 million people. No, no. There got to be somebody good for you out there. Believe me when I tell you. And so she gave me the choice of 2 meetings. Now, I don't know about you girls. I like Dennis when he talked the other night. Because, see, when I get drunk, I had Afro way before Afro came in. Because that booze would shoot up to my hair. I'd have my hair done so nice, and boop, went right to my hair. And then Mr. Bailey would give me money for clothes. I never looked too tough because I drank up the money, you know. And so I'm going to my first AA meeting. And I walked to this group. I had my hair done nice. I bought a little two-piece blue suit. And these girls are behind the coffee counter. I'm only mimicking them. I'm not making fun of them. And as I walked towards them, they looked up at me and they said, you don't look like an alcoholic. I said, what the hell did I get myself into? Let me get the hell out of here. Now, I was running out of there, and when I got to the door, and we always kept 2 people at the door, and let me tell you, once you got in here, you did not get out. There was none of this in and out that you all do today. No, it wasn't. They sat on you. They sat on you. And as I got to the door, this guy says to me, what's the matter with you, and where are you going? I said, those girls said I don't look like an alcoholic. I don't know what an alcoholic looks like. I'm about to lose my mind, my home, my children, and everything through drinking. He said, have a seat, sweetie. You in the right place. And you know, they put 2 tables together in the middle of that room, and they sat around and they shared their strength, their hope, and experience with me. And it is but for the grace of God. Ooh, Lord, have mercy. Think about it. But for the grace of God. Oh, I've been learning about the keeper. Oh, how the keeper has kept me through everything to bring me to you. And how the keeper keeps me in this fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous through everything. And it's so wonderful that first night, 3 carloads came home with me. And from July the 11th, 1952, to this very moment, I've never been a day without one of you. Even when I'm in the hospital, you're 13 and 14, you're on at the foot of my bed. You never have left me. And I cannot ever say I came this far alone. I came through a beautiful sponsor that I had for 28 years, Flo Melody. And I used to whine and cry to Flo Melody. And she said, "Listen, Liz Bailey, AA don't need you, but you need AA." And I'd run back and whine and cry some more. And she'd say, "Sit on a pot or get up off it." And she didn't say it that nice either, you know. But I'm so happy that woman didn't pamper me. Because if she'd have pampered me, she'd have pampered me right out of AA. I needed that because I came in here through the streets, not through a bedroom, through the streets. I know what it is to sleep in abandoned buildings, park benches, behind barbershops. Anywhere there was a drink, that's where I was. So I know. So they told me not to get sober for anybody but for myself. I didn't understand that. Now, if I had to stay sober for my mother, I'd have been drunk, drunk, drunk. It took my mother 29 and a half years to tell me to stay with them A's, whatever they are. And I don't plan to leave these A's. A's, I've been in AA, if you notice it, over half my life. This is home to me. This is where I love, know I belong. And so Mr. Bailey couldn't stand me sober. He took my first 10 years and he worked overtime. And then when I went to speak for Bill Wilson, I asked him to sit on the dais with me. He told me to get myself another husband for that night. So my girlfriend said, "You're going to ask him again?" I said, "Hell no, I'm the speaker." You know, so that was in August. In October, I spoke for Bill. And he was there the day before. He says, "What time do I have to be there tomorrow?" I said, "Well, my sponsor don't want me to be there early to get worn out. So you can be there at 3. Now, when I laid in my house drunk, I would hear my neighbors telling Mr. Bailey, "Get rid of that bitch. Get rid of her. You work every day for her. You give her everything. Look at her. She's drunk all the time." Now he comes to AA, and you guys, I'm going to blame it on you, line up and tell Mr. Bailey, "Boy, what a nice wife you got." Oh, did you mess it up? Because he's not used to hearing nobody say nothing nice about me. And he came home like a raging lunatic. He banged every pot on the stove. He screamed, "I got to get rid of you. I can't stand you in this sobriety another minute." I used to warn him. And God spoke to me just like I'm speaking to you. If you pick up a drink, Liz, you don't have Liz. If you pick up a drink, Liz, you don't have Mr. Bailey. You don't have him anyway. And when you pick up a drink, Liz, you're not in this house. You're waking up where you don't know where you're at, being beaten. And you know what? My father told me, my keeper told me, you got to leave. So 37 years ago, I left Mr. Bailey. I moved to a room and kitchenette. I left him sitting in a $60,000 house. That was a lot of money at that time. And you know, it was so, he thought I was going to have to come back. I never went back in that house till 24 years later. And you know, I'm going to tell you something nice, Al-Anons. I love Al-Anon. Al-Anon has helped me so much over the years that I learned to love Mr. Bailey in sobriety. I could look back and see how he kept the children, he kept the house, he kept everything together while I was in the streets. He could have cashed it all in, but he didn't do that. He stuck right in there. And so when he died, girls, he left me the house paid for. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? So I have a home. Yes. Thank God I was able to take care of Mr. Bailey. It took him 47 years to tell me he loved me on his deathbed. But at least I got it, okay? I got it. I hung in there till I got it too, huh? Yeah. My oldest son still hates my living guts. He'll be 59, May 7th. And he let me know all the years of my sobriety that he'll never forgive me or forget me for my past. And I had to come to AA to learn about me, to learn to forgive me in my ignorance as far as alcohol and alcoholism is concerned. I knew nothing. And then I found a God in AA of my understanding that has forgiven me 70 times 7. So any man, any woman, any child want to hold my past over my head has to be their problem. It is not mine. And I love my son. And I'll always. But you know what God has done for me in AA? He's given me many sons. I call Michael my son. I got 2 Rickies back in New York. I got a line of them. And you know they treat me like a queen. They treat me good. That's God's work. That's the keeper's work. My second son was an addict and an alcoholic. I want you young people to listen to me. I used to tell Dennis, his name was Dennis, Dennis, the right road may be hard, but you'll be the winner. The easy road, the price is heavy. And Dennis was shot and killed June 25th. I had 18 years of sobriety, so that's 29 years ago. I did not have to pick up a drink about Dennis. Dennis, you don't cry. I don't cry for the dead. You disturb their beautiful spirit. And Dennis will be there to open the gate for me when I go up. Another nice thing I must tell you, I didn't have to cry for my dad. My dad hung himself before my son was killed. 6 weeks after my son was killed, my sister, alcoholic sister, went into Manhattan, 1730 St. Nicholas, and she jumped 30 floors. That was a hard thing for me to watch her crushed body in that casket. But I didn't have to pick up a drink about it. Didn't have to drink about it. That's how powerful Alcoholics Anonymous is. Behind that, a nephew, 26 years old, shot and killed on Amsterdam Avenue in Manhattan. I had a cousin, handsome dude, in and out of AA, in and out of AA. He didn't need no AA. Somebody in Connecticut beat him to death in between some buildings. This is just some of my trials and tribulations that I've had to G-R-O-W through in sobriety. I've gone up and had 9 operations in 41 years. I've been cut to pieces, drunk and sober. I've taken my scars and turned them into stars. I don't worry about being all cut up. I went up and had 3 operations in 6 weeks, and the doctor said to me, "You've got cancer. I'm going to give you 6 months to live." I said, "Hold it, you don't talk to me like that." I'm in a fellowship that teaches me I live one day at a time. I'm now 32 years an arrested cancer patient. The doctor's dead, I'm not. I don't claim no sickness. I was telling somebody about, my doctor told me I had arthritis all over me. I said, "No, I don't. I'm not going to tell you I got arthritis. If I keep telling you I got arthritis, I'll have arthritis. So I don't claim Arthur. I don't need him, okay? I don't need him. Now, I'm still hopping trains and buses and planes. You know, I've never had a car in my whole sobriety. And every night a different white dude picks me up. And my neighbors are still shook up. They say, "Oh my God, from a drunk to this, what is she putting down?" I thank my God I know what I'm putting down. But I must never forget the days that I didn't know what I was putting down. And I got a new neighbor moved next door to me. And when I went to touch the baby, she pulled the baby from me. And I told her, "I'm no prostitute." She thinks I'm a prostitute, hopping these cars. I said, "I'm going out trying to help myself as well as trying to help somebody else. Me no care what you do. Me no care," she said. "Me no care." Live and let live. Live and let live. Thank God. Here lately, I've been teaching myself and others to wear people like a loose garment. Please don't take them to you. You'd be so sick if you took everybody to you. This kid comes across your path. Wear them as a loose garment. Love them. Even those that come up to me and tell me they can't stand me and I intimidate them. And I get a lot of nastiness from these new generations. And it's sad. And I have to tell them I'm not cured. The progression of alcoholism is still going on inside of me. I don't have it made. I better make these meetings if I want to live. I better get on that plane and come here or anywhere that I'm called to go if I want to live, because it's in the giving that I receive, and it's in the giving that I keep it. And my daughter says to me, aren't you sick of hearing yourself? No. 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 I'm not sick of hearing me. I know when I first came in here, I didn't want to talk to you because there was nothing but men sitting in front of me. I didn't even know how to dress when I came to AA. I got off a bar stool, slits here and slits there, low cut backs, furs thrown across my shoulder. I just twisted all over AA. A priest sent to me, asked that broad what she doing in AA. I wasn't dressing right. I had to learn how to dress. You don't get up here and speak in flowers and stripes. You always speak in solid colors, and you stand up to speak. You do not sit down if you're speaking to the audience. And I had to learn that. There was so much I had to learn. I had to learn new words. Ain't nobody talked about sober. I never heard that word. What's sober? I didn't hear that. Where's my next drink coming from? I heard that. Loud and clear. You know? And so again, I thank my God for this beautiful fellowship. I have a beautiful daughter that was 5 years old when I came in. She's going to be 52 in August. She now has Lou Gehrig disease. And I'm watching my daughter fail because it's a deterioration of the muscles. And there's supposed to be no cure for that. But I'm going to tell you this. I feel very powerful within me with all the speaking that I do and how I ask all of you to pray for my daughter. I'm going to make this confession to you. I believe she can be healed. I really believe that she can be healed. Because there's power in prayer. Power in prayer. Power in prayer. Believe me. Don't you yourself claim no sickness. Tell her to get away. I do. I don't claim any sickness anymore. And I have a beautiful AA baby. She's 43. I named her after AA Adrian Anita. Without AA, she could not have been around, too. You better believe that. She's had 12 babies. She's got 6 living. She's back in college making A pluses. She lives in Boston. She used to come down twice a year. And we walked into the AMP. I had a black hat on and a black coat. And she wears the shroud and her face is covered. And the cashier says, oh, it's a stick-up. It's a stick-up. I got hysterical laughing, and I went to the floor of the AMP. So coming back on the subway, she speaks very proper since she lives in Boston, you know. And she says, Mother, are you accepting me as a Muslim? I said, you join Hoodism, Buddhism, I really don't care whose-ism. As long as it makes you a better person. And that's what I love about AA. AA says, find a God of your own understanding. He could, he would, if he was sought. That's where it's at. I have the 12 grandchildren that I see by appointment only. I do not babysit. No. I had enough of that. I've got 34 speaking engagements after this one tonight. All through 99 into 2000. I do it one day at a time, and I'll never forget when I wouldn't speak to you, two men tricked me at 6 months of sobriety to speak, and you know I haven't shut up yet. A straight 46 years and 2 or 3 months I've been trying to carry a message. I don't tell you I carry a message. I go wherever I'm called to go. For all of you that heard me on Jekyll Island a couple months ago, I got very shook up on Jekyll Island. I told 2 jokes. And one joke was that I had my last operation 5 years ago. And I called the nurse into my room because I thought I was dying. I had the bag and the tubes and whatever. And she said to me, I said to her first, I believe I'm dying. I've tried to live a good life. I believe in God. And she says to me, oh, you don't tell God when to take you. He know when to take you. I said, let me shut up with this woman. She's not giving me no sympathy. And then if you look it up in your dictionary, sympathy's in between syphilis and shit. So I'm so happy. I'm so happy she didn't give me any sympathy. She would have killed me. She would have killed me. I go to Hawaii. I get off the plane in Hawaii. There's a banner as long as those two doors. Welcome, Liz. We love you. They put flowers on my neck. And they put a crown of flowers on my head, and I'm telling them, I'm a drunk, be careful, you know? And then when I go to stores, they put a layer around my neck. I go to meetings in Hawaii, they put another layer around my neck. I have flowers up to here. And I came back to New York, I said, I've never been laid so much in my life. I couldn't move unless they were laying me, you know. God. So I think I made the two people that ran that weekend very angry with me, but I did send them a thank you card, which I will be sending you one too, Tom, for this weekend. But I do thank you. I admit and I accept and I surrender to the fact that I am an alcoholic. I have no choice to pick up a drink if I want to live this fantastic life. I have a choice about many other things. I came to believe there was a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and it meant that I had better change my thinking and my actions if I wanted to stay sober. I made that decision one day after 5 years of sobriety to turn my life and my will over to the care of God. Whew, right this minute, I don't run my life no more. Mm-mm, I'm free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last. They say Martin Luther King went through the top of the mountain. Some kids say, Liz, you've been through the mountain. So I've been through the mountain. Yeah. But again, I want to tell you, I'm so grateful for this fellowship that saved my life. And I can today tell you, I've taken that fourth step many, many times. It's just like the big book says, more will be revealed as you come, that God knows that you can handle. And that's what's happened to me. I've taken that step many times. Today I can admit to God, to myself and another human being, the exact natures of my wrongs. I must do that. Some guy said to me the other night, he said, Liz, are you single yet? I said, didn't I just tell you I'm happy, joyous, and free? Get the message. Yes, I'm free. It's beautiful. Never did I dream that I would live this life. Never. In a wild dream. And it gets so good, it scares the hell out of you. And I noticed in 47 years, when it gets good, you guys blow it. Every time you blow it, you don't know how to handle good. Attitude plus gratitude will equal your recovery. Ask God to show you something every day that you can be grateful for. Even if you're in a depression, it pulls you up out of a depression. And so I've had to learn to ask God to help me, humbly help me, because I can't do it myself, with my character defects. Humbly ask him to help me with my shortcomings. And I had to learn how to love me to love you. I have love for you that you'll never know. And I ask you all the time, do you feel that love that I have to give you? Because I'm a kisser. I'm a kissing nanny and a traveling grandmother, okay? But I do believe in hugging and kissing. It's what saved me here. And again, there's only one person I haven't made amends to, and that's my bartender. I owe him $2. He will never get the $2. I sent his children to college, sitting on the bar stool. I bought him a new Cadillac every year, sitting on the bar stool. And I just want to take one of you to Vermont and show you the house I bought him. It would injure me to give him the $2. The place closed down when I stopped drinking there. It hasn't been there in 47 years. It's an athletic club. Again, took me 20 years. Don't let it take you 20. After having a heart attack, my throat cut from ear to ear, two glands taken out. And you know, I couldn't speak. And I said, okay, God, you're through with me speaking? Mm-mm. He brings me back every time. stronger and stronger and stronger. And I've watched it. I watch God work. Sit back and watch him work. When they say, let go, let God, that's right. Let it go. You can't control nobody's life, not even your own too much, because he does for us what we can't do for ourselves. He's a good God all the time. And so now I tell you, took me 20 years sitting there one day meditating. He said, Liz, you've got to seek me first and my kingdom and my righteousness for all things to be added unto you. For 27 years, I get up at 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. I drop to my knees and I make him first before I speak to you or anybody. He's first. And what a life I've had these 27 years, making him first. Making him first. And my spiritual awakening is that I see things differently and my values have changed. What I thought I had to have and needed, no more. Girls, I hope to go back to New York and sell my house. I don't need a big 7-room house by myself. And really, I'm not by myself, because greater is he that is in me than he that is out there in the world. So I'm really never alone, never alone. It's beautiful to learn that. Mr. Bailey put the house up for sale 5 times before he died. 5 times it fell through. And I believe it fell through for me to move back in it. So maybe my higher power won't take me out of there. I don't know. But I would like to get a condo so I can lay up without, I'm tired of shoveling grass and leaves, and I'm too old to be pushing snow, and you can't get no kids for $5 and $10 anymore. Their sneakers are $100. No, it's an insult to give a kid $5. You don't want $5, do you? No, if your sneakers cost $100. See? So that's the only reason why I'd like to get in a condo. And I'm going to see what God has for me, okay? I don't have the plan. I don't want the plan. Whatever he has for me, I'm going to be obedient. Dear God, may you go with each one of you. May I express my love to each one of you for coming out. And you made this a tremendous. I wish Tom would get up and his lady friend and see this crowd here tonight. Get up and look at it. It's something to see. It is. Why don't you get up? Thank you, Mary, and thank you, Tommy, I don't get it straight yet. I got to keep coming, you know that. See, I got to keep, make your meetings. I've been praying for the old AA to come back, and it's going to come back. We don't have 12-step calls anymore like we used to have. I was so used to bringing he or she into my home and working with you. I was so used to going with another person on a drunk, cleaning up the drunk, cleaning up the children, cooking, leave your house nice for you. And I miss doing that. But God has other plans for me, and his plans is to take me all over this United States, Canada, and all the islands. Last week I was in Bahamas. Ooh, was it nice. Oh, yeah. See, I get a chance to go to all the good places. And isn't God good? He takes me safe. He uses me mightily, and he takes me back to my home safe. And I want every one of you to get back to your home safe. Make sure he could and he would if he was sought. Put a higher power in your life. And what a life. Thank you for mine. I love you.